jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 7 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. I think we both did relatively well in the Supercoach world on the weekend, went up in the rankings, so can't complain about that. How are you going, mate?
Scored 2178. I'm up to 2,573, so sort of gone from 4,500 into 2,500 in a couple of weeks, which makes it the season a bit more interesting because I think you can sort of I'm in a position to at least make a surge towards the top from here, even if the 50K seems a long way away. I think my key on the weekend was just avoiding mistakes or avoiding the big issues and getting the rookies right. And I took Mitchell's captain score. Gorn was my backup. That cost me a little bit of points, but happy in the end anyway. Hmm. How about you? I think I beat you.
Yeah, you beat me by about 15 points. So I scored 2,163, but I'm happy to have moved up to 7,776.
Still triple my ranking.
Yeah, but a couple of weeks ago, I was out at 20,000, so that looks a lot better. Like round 6, 7,000, that's not too bad at all.
Yep.
And I've got 430K in the kitty, so I'm pretty sure I'm one premium down on you. So considering that, I was actually pretty happy with my 2,163. I had some rookies really pull their weight. I think we both were sort of looking to our Supercoach teams for a bit of consolation because our teams didn't have the most brilliant games on the weekend. So,
yeah, I had Sicily, Petrarca, and 330,000 on the bench. So, pretty happy to get a decent weekend under those circumstances. What rookies did you end up bringing in last week, Matt?
I ended up bringing in Mira and Higgins, and largely for structural reasons. So I wanted to pivot Finlayson into the middle so that I could trade out Bonner for a midfielder this week. And I decided to trade Higgins in instead of Guelphy because I wanted to be able to pivot Higgins back out into the midfield to be able to more easily upgrade to a forward from a midfield rookie instead of a forward rookie because I've got Fritch and Henry and I'd like to, as soon as possible, get that last rookie off my forward line. So that's basically it. It was structure that determined my trade-ins in the end and I didn't actually pay too much attention on the players themselves. How about you, Mark?
I think that decision might have been fairly late for you, Marcus. I was at the Essendon Melbourne game and you were still messaging me five minutes before kickoff.
Yeah.
I ended up skipping Mira and taking Guelphy and Higgins mainly for structural reasons that I just didn't have a back player that I was really willing to downgrade to Mira. Look, reasonably happy with that decision at this stage and Mira's first half scared me a little bit. But Higgins' first sort of quarter and a bit also did really, really well. I think none of the three are 100% to play this week. So, yeah, it'll be a bit of a nervous sweat going into team sheets.
Yeah, I think especially in the forward line where we've had a lot of headaches in terms of early injuries or suspensions in Sicily's case multiple times. So hopefully we can avoid some carnage. We've got a few questions asking about how to deal with the forward line early on. So hopefully Higgins doesn't add to that grief. All right, Mark, before we get into the questions for the week, and a lot of them are actually revolving around injuries this week. We've got Kelly, Grundy, Green, Walters to talk about. Let's get into a quick league update. So our league seemed to have slipped a little bit. I think we still have 3 in the top 7 and 6 in the top 20 overall. So still trending all right. But last week, I think we were just a touch higher up on the league ranking board. All right, let's get into the questions then, and we'll start off with the injury section. The first question here is from Michael Nan on Facebook. He's asking what to do with Kelly. He still hasn't been seen on the training track yet. Mark, we had a quick look in the pre-show at the injury list, and it appears that he's still listed as a test.
Yep.
So not brilliantly helpful. He's got a groin injury, one of those that can linger and potentially affect in-game performance. Does that bother you add to the equation? Or if you've held on for 2 weeks, is he somebody that you just have to persist with at this stage?
Look, it's hard to make that call. I think that there's a lot of variables that it's really hard to get a clear perspective on. If you've held for 2 weeks, I'd be tempted to keep holding. I don't think he's going to be out for like a really, really extended period of time. And it does seem that 2 weeks out, maybe they're really trying to get this injury better. So he's right for the rest of the year and right for finals and can actually perform a really high level when he comes back. It's really difficult with limited information coming out of the club. But I guess if you've held 2 weeks, I'd be tempted to hold another one.
Yeah, I think it's an unfortunate situation, but I'd be in the same boat. And hopefully Kelly's just back in this week and you don't have to worry about that. But listed as a test is at least a bit more encouraging than listed as TBC, which is one of his teammates' sort of injury status. And that's Toby Green. We got a question about him as well from William Officer. What to do with Toby Green and if it's time to cut him? It was almost a surprise out after the show last week. The news came through fairly late that it was a injury that was reasonably significant. And when Leon Cameron was asked about it post the win over Brisbane, he was pretty cryptic, saying it could be anywhere from 2 to 4 to 6, and the club injury list isn't giving us much better with a TBC. How do you read into such cryptic messaging, Mark?
Oh, well, you've just got to guess, don't you? And that's where it's really hard to give advice in that situation, because it's up to you to sort of work out on the balance of probabilities what you think is going to happen and whether it really affects your team if you hold him for that extra week. So, that's a really, really tricky spot to be in, probably with both Kelly and Green just not getting really clear information about either of them. I guess with Green popping a 50-odd in his last game, I guess you trade him and maybe bring him back later. I'm not sure. Where do you sit?
Yeah, I think I sit in the camp of probably firmly trading him. At this stage, he's had a poor preseason with a hamstring. He's come back and he's now re-injured himself in a way that they're reticent to sort of reveal a lot of detail over, and that has me very concerned. Yeah, if it's something more clear cut, like a soft tissue injury, you might be a little bit more confident. But when it's something that we have no details over and the number 6 is thrown up as a potential number of weeks out, that has me extremely concerned. So I think I'd be in the camp where you just bite the bullet and move him out.
Yeah, because I guess like if we could hold him this week and then be in exactly the same position next week, which would be very tricky.
Before we get to Michael Walters and move on to some potential trade-in targets for him, there's a question here from Jeff Lane, one of our patrons, asking what to do with Grundy. So some news came out that he had some shin soreness and actually developed before last week's game. So he's played a couple of games on it.
You wouldn't notice.
No, you wouldn't, but he did drop from a pretty lofty 140 average to a 110 mark. So I've noticed, haven't traded him in. But more seriously, there's a chance that he misses this week. It doesn't sound like he's going to miss multiple weeks, which is at least assuring for coaches, especially those that don't have Tim English available to cover. And I suppose that's sort of the major question. If you've got Tim English, it seems a fair no-brainer to just chuck him in there for 1 week. Yeah. Timmy's been averaging close to 70. It's not awful. And you certainly don't want to trade out a bloke like Grundy, who's, you know, in the top two rucks in the comp and in a set and a forget type of position. So the question, I suppose, is more if you don't have English, or let's say the worst case scenario, you don't have a ruck forward, so you couldn't trade in a forward rookie into your rucks and downgrade to a playing ruck rookie, which we're fortunate enough, hopefully, to continue having this week. If you were stuck in a situation where you had a non-playing pure ruck R3, what would you do in that situation, Mark?
Glad that I'm not going to be faced with that, to be honest. It's a real tricky one. I think, so say you bring in that Brisbane rookie, McKerny or Oscar, whatever his name is, he may get you a 30-odd this week if he plays. That is, or it could be maybe 60 points. It's not really worth trading just to get that score to cover Grundy. You wouldn't trade Grundy out because it doesn't seem like a long-term thing and he is threatening to be the number one ruck in the comp. I've got to be honest, as someone that didn't trade him in, basically I was praying for him to get injured. So
thanks, Mark. You said that to me, I think, on Friday night, and then a few days later, out comes the news. You got some sort of doll that you're sticking needles into with Brody Grundy's jumper pulled over the top of it, don't you?
Well, probably would have done it before the Anzac Day clash if I did. I don't, but I can't say that I'm really sad about it.
it probably isn't worth trading in the big O. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but the Brisbane Rock that played his first game on the weekend. If you're side swapping a non-playing rookie, Oscar doesn't seem like a particularly high scorer. He had 7 possessions and 9 hitouts, and because Stefan's still the number one ruck, he ends up spending a fair bit of time up forward. And although that could be a decent role, and I actually think he looks like a pretty good ruckman, very mobile, athletic, tall bloke. He plays for Brisbane.
Can't say I'm upset that he's playing either.
Why is that?
A lot of people have Steph.
Right. Yeah. Yep. That's fair. I'm excited to potentially be able to. Mark, we were talking about trading out one of our forward rookies to a rookie ruck and being able to bring Tim English out into the forward line. So I'm excited to potentially have that opportunity as well. But for Grundy owners, I think I'd almost prefer copping the zero this week rather than side-swapping a non-playing player to Oscar. I don't think he's that much of a must-have that you want to move on him on 1 week for the potential to get like 30 to 50 points.
Yep.
So it sounds like you either have English to sub in for Grundy or you cop the donut. Either way, you don't trade.
Yeah, pretty much. I think like the way that Grundy was speaking, it seems like something that he may carry a little bit and it may flare up at different times, but it's not going to keep him out for multiple weeks. If at all, like there's still a decent chance he plays this week.
I'll certainly be praying for that, Mark. I know you'll be praying the opposite way with your voodoo doll.
I will, not be praying for that, no.
All right, let's move on to Gary Reel's question, one of our patrons, about Michael Walters. We didn't get any questions about what to do with Michael Walters. Everyone was just asking who to trade Walters for. So if you haven't heard already, although as a Walters owner, I'd be surprised if you hadn't. He missed most of the game on Sunday, having done, is it a PCL or MCL?
I can't remember.
Either way, it's a knee injury that will see him out for at least 4 weeks. And that's case to trade, basically, which is a bit unfortunate because he was looking like a top 6 forward, Mark.
Look, my gut says, oh, he scored 17. When he comes back, maybe we could look to bring him in. But he did go into that game with a heavily strapped knee. So I think that it was sort of like a ongoing issue. So I just wonder whether he's going to come back 100% right. But he had been a pretty good starting pick up to that point.
Now, in terms of trade-in options, we've got a couple of players that we got questions about. So the first one's Paul Jones, one of our patrons who asked about McLean and whether or not his role is clear enough to say that he'll be a top 6 forward by the end of the year. Yeah. And we got another question from Richardson's son on Facebook asking whether or not the Delidio train has left the station yet. So McLean and Delidio as replacements for Walters, Mark?
McLean has definitely surprised me that like 4 out of 6 scores over 100 and they've all been over 110 just keeps getting it done. One lower score, his price isn't ridiculous at 515. I think he's presenting himself as a really good pick. I guess the thing that you should notice is that all 4 of his biggest scores have come at Etihad Stadium. The Bulldogs do play 3 of the next 5 games at Etihad and 6 of the next 9, I think. So plenty of Etihad games to come for them. And things look pretty good for McLean. So I really like him as a pick. I think Delidio, because of his price, it's just that bit lower. It's like $40,000 cheaper. That might be very enticing for people. My position hasn't changed from last week, which was probably won't be picking him for my team, but I just can't recommend against picking him because of his record and his upside, which has been so huge. And he has now played about 12 games in a row.
Yeah, but I mean, surely, I think we mentioned it last week, though. If you were going to bring him in, you bring him in at 410K, where his injury risk is factored into his price. He's gone up 60K in 1 week. So his price at 473K, it to me, he's left the station.
Yeah, look, I don't disagree with that. I find it really hard to recommend against picking someone with such an elite premium record.
McLean, I agree with you. Mark, I think I see him as a top forward and role aside, the bloke makes really good decisions with the football, has decent enough foot skills to not waste it, and moves around the ground enough to find himself as a link-up player very often. Some of the other players in the Bulldogs lineup rely a little bit more on the contested ball and then struggle with their ability to use the ball by foot in that contested situation. So Wallace, Dalhouse, there's a few culprits on that, whereas McLean seems to play a more pure outside-ish role. Not to say he can't win the contested ball, but he seems to use his traits in the right way. And I mean, he's managing a pretty great record after six rounds. So I don't see that dropping off, especially considering sort of the upside he's shown and the growth that he's shown in only a couple of years. A few other players that we're going to touch on before we move into the rookies, Mark. Probably three blokes that are top six contenders themselves. Robbie Gray, who we've talked about a fair bit. He's only got three games before the bye, so I'd be really hesitant to recommend bringing him in right now, but he is probably the top forward for the year. You've got Mundy, Mark, who's continued to surpass expectations, 522K and averaging 103 for the year so far. And then Heaney seems like a no-brainer if you don't have him. He's averaging 109 for the season so far and almost sort of in that similar must-have status as Gray potentially by the end of the season.
Yep, agreed with that.
So if you had to rank those options for Walters, Mark, McLean, Delidio, Gray, Mundy, Heaney, a 1-2-3?
I think because of price, I'd probably go McLean first. If you don't have Heaney, he'd be right up there. Mundy, I'd have close as well. I think Boak for $50,000 or $60,000 cheaper than Mundy may potentially be like a very similar player, sort of maybe a better option there. McLean number one for me, though, and Delidio not in the top three or four.
I'd have Heaney one, McLean two, and then Mundy three. I actually really rate Mundy's ability to play up forward this year. He actually looks really strong in the contest and looks fairly dangerous aerially as well. So been impressed. He was always considered a tall midfielder. So now that Frio are sort of doing okay this year, he seems to be in a better spot than he was sort of last year. All right, we'll move on to the questions about the rookies, Mark. The first one here is from Paul Jones, one of our patrons. He said, you guys were talking about Cole in the preseason. That's,
oh, wow.
Yep, Tom Cole from West Coast. And we were actually fairly excited about having him join us. He's on the bubble after only six rounds, which is a little bit unfortunate. And he's also a little bit more expensively priced at $170,000, which is more palatable as a starting pick than a downgrade target when we're now into the swing of upgrading and downgrading and trying to get the most utility from our dollar on field. Considering that, does that change how you see Cole from the preseason? How do you see his scoring potential and job security moving forward, Mark?
I think that his job security is absolutely awesome. And that's what you get for the 170K. I think that that's the difference between him and all the rookies last week was that I just can't see him getting knocked out of that side. His defensive work is awesome. He can deliver the ball. I'm super impressed by Cole and I reckon he's got a lot of potential. Is he worth it at that price? I guess it does depend on the team. And if you're bringing him into an on-field spot, potentially like a Murray downgrade to Cole is not ridiculous. You get $150,000 out of that and hopefully still decent scoring. A couple of things concern me. That is his scoring from last year was terrible. I think he averaged like in the 30s from a couple of games, from four games, and he averaged 44 the year before from two games. So that worries me. Preseason, he had two scores in the 60s. He scored 60 again on the weekend. His one big score so far was against Carlton. I know he looked great in that game, but it was against Carlton. So yeah, my thoughts are that he's a really good pick this year, but it's really, really team dependent at that price, and it's hard to downgrade to someone at $170,000.
You made the exception for Caulfield, Mark. Was the DPP factor sort of a slight swing in Caulfield's favour as compared to Cole?
Yeah, pretty much regretting bringing Caulfield in, to be honest.
Mm.
I think Cole's a much, much better pick than Caulfield. I know Caulfield's highly draft pick and dual position, but Cole's age and job security make him a much, much better pick than Caulfield, I think.
Now, we got another question here. This one's from at Julian Anise on Twitter, asking whether or not to trade in Dumont or Cole. So there is one more rookie on the bubble and happens to be a backline rookie as well. So I'm hoping for those people looking to downgrade this week that you're looking for a backline rookie. Taylin Dumont, pick three in the rookie draft in 2016. Frio are just absolutely rolling out the recruits, Mark. Good thing is they seem to be staying in the team when Ross does pick them.
I've watched a lot of him play, mate. I think his scoring potential might be pretty low. And as soon as a lot of us did double grand downgrades last week, not heaps of us will be going for the rookies this week. And I think that Cole is a better pick.
Good to note that Taylin's sort of body shape is still quite small. He's only 79 kilos for 192 centimeter frame. Definitely compared to Tom Cole, who's 186 centimeters and 81 kilos, is a little bit more bigger bodied for his frame. Looks like a more attractive option there. All right, we'll move to the trade-out candidates now, Mark. So beyond the injuries, we've got a few other players that are either underperforming or potentially have hit their max price and are ready to be traded out. So we'll start off with this first question here from Michael Voss from Facebook. What to do with Alan Christensen and Nick Holman? And that question got quite a few likes. So we've got Holman, who scored 33 this week, and that's his second poor score in 3 weeks. You know, we've seen four scores above 70. So he has been a tale of two completely different stories at the moment. 263,000 is his current price point, and his break even's 35. So still room to go up in price, but at the same time, one of the rookies that sort of accelerated to an acceptable range to trade out a little bit faster. And then the other option is Alan Christensen, 363,000. Scored 74 on the weekend, averaging 78 for the season, break even of 87. Knowing his potential to average potentially that 85, 90, 95 mark, 360K is low. But then again, if his scoring does taper out, or if that big score doesn't come for a little while, it might be advantageous to trade him out early. So it's hard really to say whether to keep or hold with either of these two blokes. Are you any more certain than I am, Mark?
Yeah, way more certain than you, mate. Christensen's gone. He is not going to get it done for Brisbane. Very different situation than he was at Geelong. And I think that he was okay starting pick just because he's kept a rookie off field, but I'm going to cut my losses there, mate. He was lucky to get to 74. There was a lot of junk time points in that. He was real struggling for a lot of that game. Can win contested ball, but just for Brisbane, it's just not going to happen, I don't think, mate. So with that break even, I think that, look, it could work out that you hold on to him, and like, I can see a scenario where it works out, but I am definitely looking to move him on this week while I'm still getting full value and none of my other rookies are complete full value. And Holman, I think, still has a break even of about 30, has been spending a lot less time in center bounces the last few weeks. Hopefully he gets named again this week and I keep him awake and reassess next week.
I'm also pretty sure I'll hold on to Holman for at least one more week. Christensen, yeah, I guess I'm definitely not as strong as you on trading him out early, but I think in the past I've had more of a tendency to hold on for mid prices for a little bit longer than you. So I think our preferences are almost sort of preset over the last 9 years of playing Supercoach, Mark. So I'm in a bit more of a hold camp with Christensen. I think I prefer to wait for him to hopefully spike a big game here or there. I don't see him going back in price, at least. And if I were to downgrade to a rookie, I'd be losing points on field. So I'm still at a point where...
You got all that money burning a hole in your pocket though, mate. And that's where I'll be looking to spend some of it.
Look, I think Christensen's more than a fair trade out target. I think even if you trade him out now and he goes up in price in the future by another 90K, you could still work out with a win trading him out now based on who you trade in. And similarly, holding on, it could still similarly work out if his price goes up. So I don't think it's a clear cut answer and that you could manufacture a beneficial trade either way, whether you wait a little bit longer or you go now. Certainly don't begrudge what your opinion is there, mate. And I know a lot of people will be trading out Christensen and probably be fairly glad to see the back of a 77 average and having only gone up 100K. But oh well, such is life. At least he wasn't a completely failed pick, still went up 100 and kept a 50 scoring rookie off field. Anyway, we'll move on to the next question. This one's from Elliot St. John from Facebook. What to do with Luke Parker? Seems to be playing a lot on the half forward flank. And then this was even in spite of Hannabury being injured on the weekend. Should we abandon ship? And I actually thought that was a bit premature because I didn't think he was doing too badly, but we got 3 or 4 questions about him and you've got Parker and you're on the show. So I thought defer to you, Mark. He's priced at 482,000. His first score was massive with a 149. He managed a 105 since then. And he actually hasn't cracked the ton since 83, 94, 75 and 79.
With him not getting injured, this is the absolute like worst case scenario that you could have expected from Parker. I just did not see this coming at all. I could see him picking up a niggle and going this way, but yeah, in the preseason, he was awesome. In round one, he was absolutely sensational and he just hasn't got anywhere near that sort of form since then. So really shocked by what's actually turned out with Parker. I think that Reed going down is bad for him. Buddy going down is bad for him because both of those things mean that he's likely to push forward because he is pretty decent in the forward line. But even as a forward, like he kicked a few goals a few weeks ago, but like, as a forward, you can still post hundreds. You're not limited to under 100. So I think, like, he's 480. I think you can't trade him out. You're going to have bigger concerns, and you've got to be focusing on upgrades and hope he comes good. Yeah, it just hasn't worked out at all, though.
I mean, he has played three of the top four sides last year in the last four rounds with GWS, Adelaide and Geelong. So it's something to keep in mind as well. They've got North, Hawthorn, Frio, Brisbane, Carlton, St Kilda and West Coast to the bye, which actually that looks like a pretty good run for Sydney coming right up. So the good thing is Parker scores big when he does score big. So hopefully he's got some big scores coming up. I'd be keeping in that spot as well, Mark. Moving on to the trade in targets now. This first question here is from Carl Harris from Facebook. He downgraded last week with danger in mind for this week. So similar to what I was thinking last week, Mark. But now it's been revealed that injury is slightly affecting his form and Selwood too, which is a bit unfortunate for me. And Kyle's now thinking that he might not be a must-have this year, Paddy Dangerfield, and he's thinking of potentially getting McRae instead, who's been absolutely killing it. That would leave only one midfield upgrade in his team left, which would be Kelly. So I'm in pretty much the same spot as Kyle this week, and like some insight, Mark. What do you reckon I should do, and what should Kyle do?
Look, I think that McRae is an absolutely awesome selection. You could see it sort of happening last year where he maybe had some down parts of the start of games last year, but his second halves were just bigger than anyone last year. They were just massive, and seems to be the number one midfielder for the Doggies now. So yeah, I reckon he's an absolute jet of a selection, and even at 600,000, I reckon that's still an okay price to be paying for him, given he's reasonably durable. I still think the Danger will become essential at some point, even if he's carrying an injury. Like, he is the sort of player that will carry an injury but then overcome it and completely destroy the composition. So I think that once he gets under 600,000, you'd be very hesitant not to pick him up. Yeah, I guess my plan was to bring him in this week, but I'm going to wait a little bit longer for that, given his average break-even and price.
I guess the other sort of complication is a lot of us started with six midfielders or premium midfielders on field for 2018, which only leaves two upgrade spots. Yeah. Now, in my particular scenario, I don't have Clayton Oliver, I don't have Jack McRae, I don't have Tom Mitchell, and I don't have Patrick Dangerfield. And all four of those look like fair contenders for not just top eight, but top six midfielders. So considering that, Mark, does that sort of change your plan for who I should be targeting to enter my team, or is that changing how you're approaching how you complete your midfield?
Not necessarily. Like, I've got Fife, Martin, Mitchell, Cripps and Canelio all averaging over 115. So they're all very much in that discussion too. So while you mentioned some players that could go huge, there's some other players out there that we have in our teams that could be matching them by the end of the year. So I don't think it's clear cut that you have to have all of those guys that you're talking about. And I think that Danger will very much be in that discussion. So he's someone that you'd want to consider, especially if he gets cheap. I guess that where it really becomes relevant is players like Zach Merritt or maybe Matt Crouch. If they're not going to quite reach that 115, 120 level, would you bring them in just because they present value?
I don't know, but even comparing sort of in my situation, I don't have Mitchell and Dangerfield, and I'd suggest that most people would consider them essential. Does that rule me out from a McRae type, a Oliver type? Mm. I mean, it certainly rules me out from a Merritt type a little bit more you know, there's question marks about a Crouch, but how does that change my approach with McRae, who's averaging 122? Like, it's tough.
I guess that the idea would be that by bringing in McRae, say, now versus Mitchell in five rounds, by doing that earlier, you get those extra points, which makes up for any difference that they may potentially have in their average. But with that said, Mitchell's 4,000 more expensive than McRae. So if you had the two facing up this week, you may go a pot in McRae, but I'd be locking in Mitchell personally.
Yeah, so I just think that makes McRae harder to select, although I like him as a selection a lot. And his next 2 weeks, Mark, he's got Gold Coast and Brisbane. So if you could be bringing him in this week, it looks fairly decent from an opposition point of view in the next couple. Now, it brings us quite nicely to the next question here from Michael Nan on Facebook. Is Mitchell a better option than Dangerfield at the moment?
I think Mitchell's got a break even of about 150 as well. I think that Mitchell's hard patch is kind of over in regards to the tag. So I think that he will probably open up with scoring a little bit. Dangers hasn't really shown the scoring quite so much this year. So right at this very week, Mitchell maybe is ahead of Danger. But I think that that could easily switch around in within 2 weeks' time. So that's a pretty close call. I think the other thing that I didn't raise before was, I know that you say, oh, look, I've got two midfield spots left and I've got to fill them with the only two players that I don't have. We're going to get midfield injuries. Like there are going to be more than just the two spots you've got coming up.
Way to jinx us, Mark. We were going brilliantly until you just did that.
Well, I've got my voodoo dolls out like I did with Grundy.
No, look, that's fair, especially because I started with some old fogies in Pendlebury and Selwood. So, no, that's absolutely fair. I just think it does make sort of the trade-in consideration, just adds a little wrinkle to it, but probably less so for McRae and Oliver types, as you've mentioned, Mark, and more so for Crouch and Zerat types. Just to wrap it up, this section up, I'm personally going to be trading Mitchell in likely this week instead of Dangerfield. I've got a lot of money in Toe, and Mitchell is averaging like 125 at the moment. So if he scores 125 and drops 5 or 10K from his 150 break even, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
I need to find money to put in somewhere. Whereas Dangerfield still got a fair bit of room to drop. And while there's still question marks over when he's going to turn his injury and his form around, you prefer to just hold off until that point. 640K is still a lot to pay for Danger, although he's dropped 110 already, but because he started at such a high price point, it's taking him a while to get below that 600K price tag that you flagged earlier before, Mark.
Yeah.
One more question about a midfielder, Mark, before we move on to the captain's corner for the week. This question is from David Bailey from Facebook, asking whether or not Josh Kennedy is worth a punt at 440K. Yeah. Or whether he's too risky given his start to the season. So he was called out as having poor form over the two rounds prior to last week and then just went gangbusters against Geelong.
But he didn't really though, did he? Like, I think he had 12 to 14 possessions in the last quarter. Like, was he on track for a pretty crappy score again?
Yeah, I think his last quarter was insane.
So it could have been I wasn't watching the live scores for that super closely, but it could have been a 60-plus point last quarter, so he may have been on track for another crappy score. I'm not convinced by JPK, mainly because, look, Parker's sucking and Parker looks to me to be in great form, so I don't know what's going on there. I think they're just sharing it around a bit. And JPK is, like, it's not just six games of poor form, it's all of last year as well.
Yeah.
Or a lot of last year.
Yeah, no, I agree. He seems a bit too risky to take the punt. And at 440K, you're picking them to be a keeper. He's not a stepladder. So if Zerat and Crouch looked slightly poorer because of some of the absolute top-end options, then surely the risk around Kennedy meandering at the 100, 105K mark, if you've only got two spots to fill and too many good midfielders to fill him with, it seems a tad too risky for mine. Although having said that, I know a lot of people double downgraded last week, and when they trade in Josh Kennedy to their teams, it allows them to do two pretty tasty upgrades this week.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people are tempted in that particular way. Does that sort of change the equation if you can double upgrade and he's one of those upgrades?
Look, I've definitely looked at that option for my team because I've got 330,000, so it's difficult to do two proper upgrades. I'm sort of like about 30 or 40,000 short. So bringing in JPK would definitely help with that. Still pretty unlikely to happen for my team, though.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We've had situations in the past where we brought in 450K stepladders, and that's not turned out too well. All right, moving on to the captain's corner, Mark. Have you had a little bit of a think about who you might go with yet?
Yeah, so I guess that you will be going with Tommy Mitchell, finally, now that he's in your team.
Does Essendon let midfielders score quite heavily against them, or do you tend to tag?
We have actually run Smith with players the last 2 weeks, but we're just playing so poorly at the moment, it's hard to foresee us completely keeping a lid on him, and I think we're maybe the worst clearance team in the competition. So, yeah, that would say that Mitchell might have a bit of a field day.
Petrarca, if he misses again this week, will be a floating donut up to the second last game on Sunday. So it does open up a whole heap of loopholing opportunities. If you've got Lachlan Murphy still and he doesn't come back this week either, then you can loophole up to the Saturday night games as well. So the first four games are potentially on offer there. Anybody else who's a likely loophole candidate, Mark?
I think I'm pretty locked in with Mitchell and De Gaon. They're two of the very, very elite scoring players, if not the absolute top two in the competition at the moment. So I'm happy to rock with those guys.
Rory Laird against Carlton. Could he be a VC option?
Yeah, anyone against Carlton's probably some chance of scoring pretty well.
But no, yeah, that's probably a good call. VC of Mitchell and De Gaon does look pretty tasty and is probably what I'll be leaning toward as well. Dusty, unfortunately, has had a couple quiet weeks in a row and been a bit disappointing from that front as a VCC option.
Yeah, and Banfield will likely go to him this week. Whether he can contain him is a different question as a first-year player. Some doubts on Cochin playing this week. Maybe Martin takes a bit more responsibility, not sure. He does seem a failure, like more of a vice-captain than a captain choice at the moment.
All right. And with that, I think that wraps up this week's show. Mark, do you have anything to leave our listeners with? You'll be taking next week off, and then I think we'll see you. We'll catch you again for the week after next, Mark.
Whatever you do, do not trade Bomber Thompson into your team.
Wow, crazy stories that are coming up around Bomber.
Mm.
All right, Mark, looking forward to catching you in a couple of weeks, and hopefully I've caught up to you and you don't get to keep making your... You have a triple the ranking that I do, Jake, any longer.
I'm happy. I'm happy if you're ranked 300 when we catch up next, as long as I'm ranked 100.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, still, I've only beat you in one out of the 5 weeks of the year so far. So hopefully.
There's actually 6 weeks.
Six. But, one of the six, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, long, long, long season ahead, mate.
Yeah. All right, I'll get my... competitive game face on then, and with that, we'll see you all next week. Bye.
There you are.